Hey, what's up? This is LZ, and welcome to episode 3 of On Serve. 3 of the past 4 years, Sam Querrey has made it to at least the quarterfinals of Wimbledon. He's beaten Rafa. He's beaten Djokovic. But his biggest win may have been convincing Abby Dixon to marry him a little bit more than a year ago. And he has Taylor Swift to thank.
He's done it! Massive win for Sam Querrey. Massive shot.
In some ways, just being on court is a win for Bradley Klein. The American is not a household name, but his determination to beat the odds is a story that every household can identify with. And in many ways, Bradley's journey on tour is much more the norm than the names you may know. I had a chance to talk with both men on this episode of On Serve with LZ Granderson. I am here with one of my favorite players ever and one of the good guys on tour, Sam Querrey. And Sam, you got married last June. So you're approaching 1 year. What has life taught you in this 1 year?
Mostly, I got to keep better track of my wedding ring. I've lost it twice already, but I've got backup, so it's that's kind of helpful. But so far, it's great. My wife Abby's amazing. She travels with me to a handful of tournaments. Couldn't be more supportive, and it's going well so far.
Why are you constantly losing your wedding band?
I'm taking it off when I practice, when I go to the gym. I can't sleep in it. When I shower, I take it off. So it's on and off all the time. So I'm still getting used to it, but I have it here, and I'm getting. I just finished.
You're not wearing it now. Did you lose it?
No, it's in my bag. But I just finished practice, and I forgot to put it back on. I'm finding a kind of a rhythm of what to do.
Why don't you just get a tattoo?
That's what she would like, and I don't know. I'm too scared to get inked up. I feel like it'll hurt.
Wait, hold up. You've been a professional tennis player for what, almost 2 decades now?
It's my 12th or 13th year. I tattoo, I just feel like it's going to hurt.
But being on tour hurts.
It's a different kind of pain.
And you just adopted a new child, is that what I hear? Your puppy?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say we adopted it, but we got a new chocolate lab. Her name's Ruby. She's amazing and really cute and well-trained, and my wife's with her right now, so it should be, it's going to be a fun addition to the house.
Does Ruby constantly lose her collar because she's taking it off when she takes a bath and practice and stuff?
Yes, actually. I mean, we take the collar off her all the time, and then she starts running around without it. We panic, but we're trying to keep it on her more often.
You know, I can't help but notice John Isner gets married, goes on perhaps the best run of his career. You got married recently, which kind of somewhat coincided with one of your best running Grand Slams. Should you have gotten married earlier, and you would have had much more success earlier?
I should have gotten married. Should have asked Abby to marry me a year earlier. Maybe it would have helped out, but hopefully I've got a good stretch of kind of game left in me, and being married and having her by my side will be helpful.
How did you guys meet?
We met for the first time about 3.5 years ago in London. She was over there working, and I was there playing Queens, Nottingham, Wimbledon, and we went on a date before Wimbledon, and then 3 years later got married.
You're skipping some steps. Were you in a bar? Was it Tinder? Was she in the stands?
We had a couple mutual friends, and we got each other's number, and then our first date was at a Taylor Swift concert in Hyde Park.
So you owe it all to Taylor Swift.
If you want to look at it like that, yeah, sure.
Do you remember the song that Taylor was singing when you looked over and said, she might be the one?
Gosh. It was Love Story. I think that was her go-to song.
What is it about clay that, I don't want to say is difficult, but perhaps you don't have your best showing?
Clay, for people that don't know, it slows the game down. And I'm a guy who likes to penetrate the ball through the court. I have a fast serve, a fast forehand, and when clay builds up on the ball, it slows the game down and allows my opponents to maybe get to some shots where on a hard court and clay court they couldn't get to. On a clay, they can kind of make one more ball back. And then also over the years, I struggle with sliding on my right foot, which makes it a little difficult. I just, it's something that doesn't come natural to me. I can't quite figure it out no matter how much I try. Sliding on my left foot, which is normally more difficult for especially a right-hander. I've got down perfectly. But sliding out to my right or sliding up for a drop shot is something I've just really always struggled with. So that kind of, I guess doesn't hurt me, but makes it a little more difficult at times.
Is the scouting report out on you on the sliding in the right foot, or did you just expose yourself?
No, everyone knows. They haven't listened to the podcast, so I'm not going to slide out to my right. But, you know, if you watch Agassi play back in the day, he wasn't a guy that slid around. It's not the end of the world. I'm still confident on the clay. Like you said, I haven't had my best results, but I've had some good results on clay, so I'm still confident on it.
You're a California kid. Did you not skateboard? Did you not surf? Or is it the moving that's kind of throwing you off a little bit?
Just like I said, it's the moving out to the right is where I struggle. But I didn't skateboard or surf, but I played basketball, baseball, soccer, golf, tennis. I did every other sport imaginable. So I do feel like I'm a good athlete with good movement and naturally can do things. It just sometimes movements, you know, athletes can't figure out certain things. And that's one of the things that just, has kind of been my kryptonite over the years.
What will it take for American men to get back to that place where they are a threat year after year after year?
I don't know. It's got to be better. That's the answer that I've been.
I can see coaching's in your future. Hey, you, be better. All right, go out there.
That's the question that's been asked for 10 years in press. Why isn't there American male steadily in the top 10 and winning these slams? And, I don't have an answer for it. I know we're all doing the best we can. We'd like to be up there fighting for slams all the time, and hopefully these young guys are better than we are, like I said, and they have the firepower in the game and the mental capacity to follow through and win these big tournaments.
Are you at the point in your career where you no longer think winning a major is a possibility and you'd just be happy with a good result? Or do you still enter a tournament like a U.S. Open and says, yeah, this is doable?
It goes back and forth. You know, when I first started my career at 18, if I'm 31 now, I would have said, oh, 31, I'll probably be about done. But now when you see, you know, led by Federer at 37, there's so many guys, 34, 35, 36, that are playing the best that they've ever played. And so I do have belief that I have another 5 years of good tennis in me. And, you know, right now, maybe no, the belief is not there that I can go to the French Open or go to Wimbledon and win it. But a lot of times for me, especially, tennis is a game of confidence. A couple years ago when I semi in Wimbledon, I did feel like I could win it in that draw, and I did feel like I could win the U.S. Open. And I think if I start to win more matches and find my game and get some confidence, I will believe that I can win Grand Slams when I enter them. It kind of comes and goes based on how I'm feeling sometimes.
What do you tell the young guys? One of the great things about American players is that they've always seemed to be camaraderie, whether it's Davis Cup or just growing up together in Florida learning the game or California learning the game together. What do you tell them as they're preparing for this run in their career?
I don't necessarily tell them anything specific. They've got teams and coaches around them and people to give them advice and what to do. But, I more just try to show them. I think all of us, I feel like I've been a pretty good pro in terms of staying healthy, you know, practicing, just kind of doing the right things day in, day out. And I hope that those guys can see that. And, I'm cheering for them. At the same time, I don't give them too much advice because I still want to beat them when I'm out there. when I'm retired, I'll give them more advice.
Best win you've had in your career?
It's probably Rafael Nadal in Acapulco a couple years, just because it was a finals and it was Nadal and it was in Mexico where he really had the crowd behind him. So that was a really special win.
What was it about that particular tournament that put you in place to beat one of the all-time greats?
It was really, kind of getting back to where you can have confidence in slams. The three matches before that I had beat Goffin, Thiem, and Kyrgios. So I had a lot of confidence beating three really good players before that. And, I had momentum, I had confidence, and it really gave me the belief after beating those guys and Kyle Edmund in the first round that, hey, if I swing away and do the right things, I've got a big enough game to beat this guy.
You're wearing a Dodger cap right now. Are they finally going to get the job done this year? Two straight years to the World Series. Is three is the charm?
I hope so. I'm a big baseball fan. I grew up playing baseball. My dad played baseball in college. So I love the Dodgers. I hope they win it this year. It's been great to have them make these runs the last 2 years, but hopefully this is the year they can get it done.
Thanks to Sam Querrey. Coming up after a quick timeout, Bradley Klon would join me on this episode of On Serve with LZ Granderson. Bradley Klon made the decision to go to college instead of turning pro. I started our conversation asking him if he regretted that decision.
I have zero regrets about going to school. Even if I thought that it would benefit my tennis more by going the pro directly, which I don't necessarily think it would have for me, just in terms of maturing throughout school, but I thought going to school and getting my education was the best thing for me, for my life in general, for the next 60, 70 years, not just my tennis career. I loved everything about school, going to class, learning the friendships that I developed off the court there, not just with my teammates, but other people at school that I've remained close with. And I still felt like I was able to get stronger and develop my game. And when I graduated, I was 21. And nowadays, when you see the longevity that people are having out there, I don't necessarily feel that I was behind or that I needed to play catch up a lot, that I still had a lot of years left to learn on tour and grow that way.
You're not a household name. I'm pretty sure you can go to Target or Whole Foods and not be bothered. Do you want to spend the rest of your career where you are right now because you seem like such an even-keeled person? Or do you long for the ability not to go to Target and be bothered?
I don't think that I long for the ability to go somewhere and be bothered. What I want is just to see really how far I can improve my own game. If that's top 20, if that's top 50, wherever it may be, just for my own personal sake, seeing how good I can really get.
That is an incredibly altruistic answer. No wonder you went to Stanford. So you're trying to tell me you don't want to be famous?
I don't need to be famous. You know, that's not why I play tennis. I like competing. You know, I love getting out there and just battling and trying to see if I can find different ways to win. And I like the feeling of winning. I don't need the fame that comes with it. I do understand that that's part of it when you get top 10, top 20, top 30, wherever the ranking is, that people will notice you more. But for me, it's like my goal is I got to 63 5 years ago. It's can I be better than that just for my own sake, knowing that when I finish my tennis career, if I left everything out there and I maximized my potential, then I'll feel pretty good moving on to the next chapter.
Speaking of feeling pretty good, I'm assuming you're feeling pretty good health-wise now, but what was your life like when you were dealing with essentially 2 years worth of injuries?
Yeah, it was really challenging, mentally, probably more so than anything. I had struggled with the back problems for the better part of 2 years, but the mental, emotional strain of the uncertainty if I was really going to get better, if I was making the wise choice to keep playing tennis, if this was something that was going to be chronic, just these never-ending fears kept creeping into my head, and they really held me back. To be honest, I was never, shouldn't say never, but it took me a long time to be able to let go of those fears and start trusting again that I can't really worry about how my back's going to feel in the future. If this is what I really want to do, I surrounded myself with a good team of physical therapists and doctors, and they all, you know, they gave me the green light to keep going for it and let pain be my the determining factor. So once I was able to kind of control my mind a little bit in that regard and just start making baby steps and seeing progress, I started seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I'm actually going to get back to playing tennis. I'm going to get back to top 100. I'm going to get back to whatever ranking it was. I'm going to be able to get back, and I'm going to be able to compete in tournaments. And the ranking stuff didn't come until later. It was always in the back of my mind, even when I had surgery. Like, I'd like to get back and try and beat my career high, see if I can be better than that. But I really had to kind of shrink my goals and try and take it one day, one week at a time, and just, can I start hitting serves today? Can I see if I can be a little bit faster today than I was yesterday, a little less fearful of my back when I'm hitting shots? So it was, I guess, humbling to kind of have to reset so much and start looking at, like, such small positives when I consider where I was before. But it really made me enjoy it that much more. Like, I started finding enjoyment in just the little things that we take for granted.
You talked about the long journey toward seeing the light at the tunnel, but tell us a little bit about the darkest moments. What was that like for you physically? What was that like for you mentally when you were at your lowest?
Physically, it was just pain sitting down, not feeling, feeling like I needed to lie down or stand up all the time, being uncomfortable sitting on the couch watching television, needing to put a pillow on the ground and lie down there to read a book, or not feeling confident getting in my car and driving 2 hours from LA to San Diego on my own, needing someone else to drive me there just so I could recline the seat and wouldn't have to worry about driving myself. Any exercises, like, I didn't hit a ball for 6 months just for fear of every time I took a swing that there was a little bit of pain. But I think the bigger burden was just mentally feeling those pains and constantly wondering what it, like, overanalyzing it to an unhealthy amount and asking myself, what does this mean, or should I be feeling this or that? And it drove me crazy for sure. There was a lot of contemplating retirement weekly, if not monthly. I tried to keep myself as busy as I could. I tried to look at other opportunities, start reading, almost start planning for life after tennis. And it reached the point where I had acknowledged to my family that this was it. Like, it's time to move on. And then I just, 2 days later, I stumbled across, I came across an old strength coach who just, I had talked to him about my issues a little bit, and he said, oh, you know, I've dealt with a lot of clients who had this, and gave me some material to look over, and kind of got me excited a little bit, and just changed my mental outlook, and all of a sudden I went from acknowledging that this was the end of tennis to 3 weeks later hitting tennis balls again, and kind of all of a sudden gaining that excitement back. I felt like there was a lot more reason to get up in the morning, and you know, this tennis has been my passion for so long, and it's always something that's going to be a part of me. I'm not going to be able to play forever, but I knew that I had more left in the tank, and I wasn't willing to accept that this back injury was going to end my career.
Were there any specific exercises that your old strength conditioning coach brought to your attention, or was it words of encouragement and empowerment that gave you the strength?
It was really just words of encouragement and reading. Reading, he gave me a book that just talked about the mental aspects of back pain.
What was the name of the book?
Healing Back Pain.
That's a really creative title. I would have never have guessed it in 1,000 years.
Yeah, I was definitely skeptical at first. But as I started reading it, there were just some bits, you know, it's like anything. If you can pull bits and pieces from everyone that you come across and learn from and kind of spin into this, your own life story, you can make a lot of progress that way. And that's, I was able to pull some important topics from the book and weave it into the way I was going about physical therapy and fitness, and it changed my mental outlook. It made me start thinking much more positively again, because I'd gotten to a pretty negative, dark place that I knew wasn't healthy. I just didn't see a way out for a little bit of time.
Now, we started talking before the recording, and I told you I'm a fan, and I've seen you very early in your career as a pro, and then I saw you recently, and you're getting the hell out of the forehand now.
Yeah.
And you look noticeably thinner. What has been the most significant change for you, whether it's dietary or training or strength and conditioning, from your early days on tour to where you are now?
I think I put a lot more emphasis on off-court fitness when I came back. I knew before my time off, I was spending 3-4 hours a day on court. I was always feeling like I needed to hit more balls, and like it always felt like it was never enough because I wanted it so bad, but I didn't know that there's such thing as too much. And so when I came back, I put much more emphasis on fitness, strength, and also I actually feel like I'm moving better post 2 back surgeries than I ever have. I put an emphasis on not just strength and fitness, but I guess technique, movement technique, and just moving the most efficient, moving as efficient as I can. And that really helped me on court. And then when I got on court, I knew that I wasn't going to be going 3-4 hours a day, but I made sure that those 2 hours I was maximizing every ball that I could. I felt like I was more disciplined. I was a little bit more focused, and I think I touched on it earlier, but I didn't take it for granted as much that these opportunities were just going to come around.
You think when you first left Stanford and got on tour, you kind of just assumed because you were always winning in college that the winning was just going to keep going?
I don't think I assumed. I don't believe that I assumed I was going to just keep winning. I came out and I did okay, but I didn't. I felt like I was just kind of you know, I'd win a couple matches here and there, but I'd never really go that deep in challengers. I got myself in the slam qualies, but I felt like I was just kind of humming along a little bit, making a little bit of progress, but a little too much up and down. And when I got, in the summer of 2013, I felt like I really dedicated myself, and that was when I had a really good 6 or 8 month stretch. And then I felt like once I got inside 100, I kind of, my back started flaring up again. I don't know if I got a little complacent, but a little bit lost. And then that kind of led to, that transitioned into the 2 years off. So when I came back, I just thought that, you know, I've missed a lot of time. I've shown that I can play at that level, but I missed 2 years of my career, and my career, I mean, it is closing. It's not like I can certainly play plenty of years, but I don't have time to waste. I don't have time to kind of hum along and not making sure I get the most out of every day.
You mentioned your friends and family. What's your support network looking like now?
My family has played a huge part in kind of getting me through those 2 years, and then continuing to push me through. I travel with Peter Lucassen, my coach, and Scott Clark, my physio, and the two of them and I have really... I started working with Scott last year, and I felt like that gave me a lot more confidence in my body physically, that I could play week in, week out, taking care of all little, I wouldn't even call them injuries, but just the little pains that come up throughout the year. And that gave me a lot of confidence mentally as well, that I could stay out there and feel confident in my body. And then just the little tweaks that Peter and I have made in my game to get me playing more aggressively really started paying off about midway through last year. But it's also important to mention just the support from the coaches that I had growing up as well. My longtime coach, Lee Mary, who's family to me, he started with me when I was 11, and he's always been a voice that I can go to for any advice I need on or off the court throughout all this, throughout my entire career, college, everything. So, and he and Peter have a good relationship and are able to bounce ideas off each other, and they're on the same page. So that makes it easy for me to. It's important to have everyone on the same team, for sure.
We talked earlier about how you're not necessarily a household name, not a huge amount of success in terms of winning titles, so thus not a lot of success in terms of earnings. Yeah. You went to Stanford. Is it possible you could be making more money now applying your education from Stanford and is being a professional tennis player?
Yeah, I'm sure there's an argument to be made there. You know, that's why I went to Stanford and got the degree, is just to give myself options and, allow, you know, I guess open as many doors as possible for my, career. That being said, I loved tennis growing up. I always had dreams of being a professional tennis player, and when I left school, I just said I didn't give myself any, at least I don't remember giving myself any time limit. I just was going to go for it, and I just dived head in and dove head in and like had a decent summer, and right out of college, I qualified and won a round in my first U.S. Open as a pro, and it was just kind of away we go from here. I mean, you know, like we talked about earlier, after that, it was still slow progress. But yeah, that's the Stanford degree is something that I'll always have. It's something that I treasure as much as any tennis accomplishment I'll ever get as well. And when the time is right and I'm ready to step aside from tennis, I plan on putting that degree to good use.
Special thanks to Sam Querrey and Bradley Klon for letting me spend some time with them in their world. And to Chris Morales, Dan Zampillo, and Pete Genesini for helping to produce this podcast. If you like this show, please rate and review it. And check out episode 4 as I talk with the great Zena Garrison and Southern California native Stevie Johnson. On Serve with LZ Granderson is an ESPN audio production.